Coming up on Golf Today, Nelly is back to work this week chasing another one of these. But last night, she was in New York City for fashion's biggest night at the Met Gala. Is Nelly on the verge of crossover stardom? Well, the stars of the PGA Tour will be in the Queen City at Wells Fargo. We'll hear from a three-time champ in Rory, plus a live report from Quail Hollow is just moments away. And our roundtable reconvenes. Who needs a big week at the PGA? Is Brooks your favorite? And who's looking for mojo, good vibes, and a few extra birdies? Find out next on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
The incredible winning streak continues as Nelly Korda captures the Chevron Championship. Nancy Lopez, Annika Sorenstam, and now Nelly Korda. Five wins, five straight starts.
Golf Today on a Tuesday. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. What a time in our game. The best player in the world, Nelly Korda, chasing history this week. She was sashaying down a red carpet in New York City last night. Plus, we have a signature event in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Big week for a lot of folks. Nelly going for the half dozen is clearly the biggest story in golf. There's a lot of people gathered at Quail Hollow this week for the Wells Fargo Championship who need to find a little bit of Nelly Korda themselves. You look at Victor Hovland, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas. There's a lot of guys out there looking for some traction before they get to the second men's major next week.
Gathered. Good word, because there was a gathering last night in New York City. Did you see it, Nelly Korda, at the exclusive Met Gala at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City? The theme was Sleeping Beauty, Reawakening Fashion. And Nelly was wearing Oscar de la Renta for those keeping score at home. I mean, look at these photos, Eamon. We're looking at a superstar.
We really are, and this is a crossover moment in terms of women's golf. This is by far the biggest night. It's one of the biggest nights in New York City, which is a city of big nights, but this is the biggest night in fashion. And Nelly Korda got a lot of people talking last night.
Doing it off the course and, of course, doing it on the course as well, inside the ropes. She's the third player in LPGA Tour history to win five straight starts. This week, she can become the first in history to win six in a row, break away from Nancy Lopez and Annika Sorensen.
And the numbers don't lie, Damon. If you want to see a picture of dominance on the LPGA Tour, take a look at Nelly Korda's ranks on tour this year in basically every single category that matters. She is the number one player on the LPGA Tour, which is why she's also the dominant number one player in the world. So I guess my question to you, Damon, is who in their right mind would bet against Nelly Korda this week at the Cognizant Founders Cup?
Not me. She has the star-making power. She has the game, everything working. And I want to go back to this Met Gala for a moment. That photo that we saw, the start of the show in the Oscar de la Renta, has been viewed more than a million times on X. We have asked for her to be more available, up front, visible, embracing moments like this. Well, last night, with the likes of the Williams sisters and Lewis Hamilton and Angel Reese, some of the biggest names in sports, it's where she belongs. And I tell you what, she looks a lot more comfortable than maybe we thought she would in this type of environment.
Yeah, there are going to be opportunities and marketing opportunities, I think, that Nelly Korda is going to want to embrace. This would be an obvious one, but let's not overlook the fact of why Nelly Korda was at the Met Gala. It's because of what she's doing in her chosen profession. And what she's doing is remarkable, not just in the fact that she's won five in a row. That's not to be underestimated, but how she has won five in a row. I mean, this started in the very first round with the LPGA Drive On. She was three strokes back of Lydia Ko through 16 holes in the final round and finished eagle birdie to force a playoff and wins the playoff. She went on and won in lousy weather. She's won in different formats. She won a match play tournament out in Vegas as well when she beat Leona Maguire in the final out there. And then she comes and wins a major under the most extreme scrutiny possible because that was the fifth consecutive win. She decided to take a week off rather than play the LA event right after the Chevron. So it's going to be interesting to see if she's kind of, you know, detoxed a little bit from that kind of scrutiny and pressure. But it's not as though taking time off has worked against her. She had a 7-week layoff during the course of this season and is still having this dominant performance that we're seeing. It really is remarkable for the variety of the manner in which she's actually won tournaments.
I also think she's a tougher person, more well-rounded now because of some of the things she has lost, including time and the loss for a moment, and longer than a moment, of months of good health when she had that blood clot following winning an Olympic gold medal, for example, winning four other times in 2021 as she did, when it looked like there was no one who could stop her, maybe outside of Jin Young Ko, and it seemed like we were on the verge of a great rivalry. Well, she has come back, has Nelly, on the other side of some scary, frightening moments. The pictures were a lot different a few years ago. They, they weren't in a gown at the Met Gala. It was her in a hospital bed and saying, you know, I'm thankful for the prayers and the good thoughts. Can't wait to get back out there and competing. So she has great game, as we've always known, but she has some real earned perspective as well.
Hard-earned perspective. And in terms of the rarefied era she finds herself now in, we've seen great winning streaks in the past in this game. Obviously, Byron Nelson's 11 in a row. Hogan had six. But in the modern era, let's start with Nancy Lopez back in 1978. Yeah. Nancy had five in a row. She finished tied 13th in trying to get that sixth win. Annika, five in a row in 2005, finished tied 12th. Tiger did it three times with winning streaks. He had seven in a row, which ended with the match play when he failed to advance beyond the round of 16. And then he had six in a row in 1999, 2000, five in a row in 07, 08. Both of those came close. He was second at the Buick and fifth in a WGC. It's extraordinarily difficult to keep a win. It's difficult to get to a win streak at this point. It's even more difficult to keep it moving.
But in this scenario, and we've asked for more from Nelly, I think her flatline personality that we see, sometimes her reticence maybe at times to be in the spotlight, I think it helps her in the midst of chasing history. She comes from a supremely athletic family of you know, Olympians and tennis Grand Slam competitors and brother and champion and father. I mean, this is going to be, in terms of the pressure of competition, I think her makeup is perfect in chasing history, in terms of knowing what it's like, having been around the dinner table at the Cordas, that this is nothing new for this family in terms of chasing high achievement.
True, but let's also point out, we talk about Nelly's reticence, and she's talked about that herself, but when she's at a tournament, she meets her obligations. We'd like to see her a little more often, but she meets her obligations at a tournament. Well, you know who else did that and didn't give much beyond that? It was Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Tiger wasn't exactly putting himself out there on the off days and feeling as though he had to sell the product. The product was built around Tiger. Tiger did not build the product in terms of where the PGA marketed itself, the PGA Tour, during Tiger's peak years. They kind of attached themselves to this luminous presence, and the LPGA should probably be planning on doing the same with Nelly Korda. It's great. The more she wants to embrace that public persona and marketing the product, I'm all for that.
Yeah.
But we have to point out a double standard here. Tiger didn't do much of that either, beyond what was required as an obligation of playing a tournament.
I'll tell you what, Nelly seems ready to handle everything thrown her way. She'll be a great week at Upper Montclair Country Club in New Jersey. On the PGA Tour, meanwhile, Quail Hollow Club plays host to the Wells Fargo Championship, the sixth of eight signature events this year. Limited field will be competing for a $20 million purse, and there is no cut. And news on Monday, you probably heard this, world number six Ludvig Åberg from Sweden revealed that he is dealing with a knee injury and needed to withdraw from the signature event. In his statement, Åberg said, "After consulting with my doctors, we think it's best that I take some additional time to rest." The 24-year-old added that he still looks forward to playing next week's PGA Championship at Valhalla. Todd Lewis joins us now from Quail Hollow. T. Lou, what have you learned about this story?
Well, first off, Ludvig Åberg was planning on playing the Wells Fargo Championship. As a matter of fact, at home, he was practicing and playing, getting ready to compete here in Charlotte. But he noticed that his left knee was swollen. Now, the interesting point of this is the fact that there was no pain, just swelling. Now, it's his left knee. And if you have knee issues, if you're a golfer, the left knee is probably the worst because you turn and post up on that left knee if you're a right-handed player. But again, no pain, according to Ludvig and his camp, involved in his knee, but there is that swelling. And after consulting with doctors, Ludvig and his doctor's medical team decided that it is best to maybe rest, take this week off, apply some ice to that knee, and then hopefully the swelling will reduce, and then he'll make his way to Louisville, Kentucky for the PGA Championship at Valhalla. But that is the issue. It is his left knee with some swelling, but according to Ludvig and his camp, no pain in that knee, so that is a good sign. Now, of course, Oberg's having a phenomenal year. Over his last four starts, he hasn't finished outside the top 15, which includes a second-place finish at the Masters. So we'll see how that knee progresses over the next few days and if it'll be a factor at the PGA Championship next week.
Todd, speaking of things that we're going to be missing at Quail Hollow, certainly going forward, the sponsor, Wells Fargo, is drawing to a close in terms of its relationship with the tournament there. Have you got any information yet in terms of what we're looking at going forward for this event?
Well, first off, let's note that Wells Fargo has been the title sponsor for this tournament here in Charlotte in more than two decades. This is a staple here in the Charlotte area, this tournament. It is supported, of course, by fans from North Carolina and South Carolina. You're going to expect large crowds here this week. But Wells Fargo is no longer going to be the sponsor after this tournament. Now, the price tag to be the title sponsor for a signature event on the PGA Tour is $25 million. Now, Wells Fargo and the PGA Tour did negotiate last year, but Wells Fargo did not quite meet that $25 million request from the PGA Tour, and so both sides parted ways. So now the PGA Tour is searching for a new sponsor here in Charlotte, and there were some questions that this tournament may actually move out of Charlotte, but the PGA Tour seems to have found a sponsor. It is Truist Bank. Now, Truist is a Charlotte-based bank, and it's a staple here in the community, and it seems to be that that announcement is going to be made in the next couple of weeks. It will not be made this week, but Truist Bank looks to be the title sponsor here for this tournament moving forward. And Johnny Harris, who is the president of Quail Hollow, who is a fixture here in Charlotte, is going to make sure that this tournament stays here in Charlotte, and it looks like Truist Bank is going to be the new title sponsor. Again, that announcement not happening this week. With respects to Wells Fargo, they want to celebrate, the club and the PGA Tour wants to celebrate what Wells Fargo has done here over 22 years, but Truist Bank is going to be the new title sponsor, it looks like, for the PGA Tour signature event here in Charlotte.
Todd Lewis reporting from Quail Hollow. Much more from him in the next hour as Wells Fargo's sponsorship comes to a close. How critical is it that a robust sponsor takes hold of this event? As Todd said, this is a staple of the PGA Tour. I've been fortunate to cover it about a half dozen times. And from the beginning, it always kind of felt like a bit of a mini Masters, just in terms of the quality of the golf course. I'm talking about every blade of grass, you know, in perfect place. How the wives and the caddies were taken care of and the players. This is golf country. This is an important stop on the PGA Tour.
And if you go to any other community on the PGA Tour schedule, you'd probably hear the same story, that the tournaments matter in the communities that they're in. Mm. And certainly, whenever you're talking about the new system that exists on tour with signature events, there becomes a very significant financial onus on sponsors. And let's be clear here, the PGA Tour didn't create this situation. Player greed created this situation where you can go to longtime sponsors who have given so much to this game and to their communities and to the tour, in this case, for 20 years, and your $20 million isn't enough. We want more. That's why those sponsors aren't there. It's the players and the greed of players. So the players are in no position at any point in this process to point fingers at either sponsors or tournament organizers or tour executives and say, you are eroding the sponsor base here. The sponsor base is perilous because more is being asked of them to satisfy the greed of players.
Is there no going back? Is the genie out of the bottle in terms of those numbers and someone saying, hey, we're doing just fine? Or is it too late in this, you know, once battle and now negotiation, non-negotiation between PGA Tour and LIV?
There's a going back if we do get to a point where sponsors say, you know what, this product does not deserve that level of investment, that it's a niche sport and it can't possibly deliver the marketing return beyond what we agreed to sign up for initially, knowing what we were getting. And if you don't see the best players compete often enough and you don't see them play well, well, then the sponsors are going to, as fans do, occasionally question, the product and why am I not getting the satisfaction that I want? So the onus really here is on players. There's a new sponsor lined up here for Charlotte. So you can turn around and say, OK, well, the tour has done its job. You wanted more money. We've got somebody to come in and do it. What are you delivering for the sponsor? Because the reality, as we move through what the new tour is going to look like, particularly with the Strategic Sports Group private equity investment, players are out of their mind if they think that they're now going to get paid purely for playing good golf for 4 days or making a cut. A lot more is going to be asked of them in terms of fan engagement and sponsor interaction. That the old way of doing it where you just simply got paid to play doesn't actually apply anymore. It's not going to apply going forward. And the sponsors are entitled to ask for a little bit more out there. And this is why you see so much tension on tour these days in the locker room among the sort of the have-yachts and the have-nots.
Yeah.
The guys who are in a field like this week. And you see even two board members in Adam Scott and Webb Simpson having gotten their fourth sponsor invitation this year to a $25 million purse. And that doesn't sit well with a lot of guys in the locker room who are being told and facing the reality that their playing opportunities are going to dwindle, that they have a card, but you don't really have much priority ranking out there. So there are all of these kind of competing agendas out on the tour these days between the rank and file members and the actual elite players. And right now, the fans are starting to feel squeezed, yeah. The sponsors are starting to feel squeezed, and it is all due to what players believe they're entitled to be paid.
Competing interests around the world of golf, competing interests within the PGA Tour. For the last couple of years, we've been talking a lot more than just birdies and bogeys, it seems.
And there's always going to be a lot more to talk about on that front, Eamon. After the break, we're going to continue this conversation. We're going to add a couple of voices for a roundtable on everything that's worth talking about this week. Starsky and Hutch of Golf Channel are going to join us. That's one of them right there. Guess which one? We'll be right back. We're back on Golf Today. Wyndham Clark is your defending champion at this week's signature event. He won the Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow last year for his first PGA Tour victory. 63 in the third round helped him towards a four-shot win over Xander Schauffele. Less than 2 months later, he also won the U.S. Open.
Good week on the PGA Tour. Eamon, coverage of the Wells Fargo Championship begins Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern right here on Golf Channel. Friday the same time. Saturday you see 1 p.m. Eastern and Sunday as well. Also streaming on Peacock. Let's continue the conversation now with a Golf Today roundtable. Welcome in three-time PGA Tour winner Johnson Wagner from Quail Hollow and Golf Week senior writer Rex Hogg. Great to see you guys. Listen, Johnson, I want to start with you. You're at Quail Hollow. You live at Quail Hollow. Member, how critical is this week as a tour stop for the PGA Tour as a new suitor and sponsor is on deck?
I don't want to talk about the new sponsor. I'm a little disappointed with the PGA Tour announcing that. Wells Fargo's had such an incredible run going back to the Wachovia days since 2003. I think we're here to celebrate Wells Fargo's final year. It's a big week. It's exciting with the field that we have here being now just 69 players, but the weather's holding out today. Hopefully we'll get lucky and it's going to be the best Wells Fargo championship we've had to date.
Rex, somebody else who lives at Wells Fargo, lives at Quail Hollow with Johnson, is in the field this week. Webb Simpson is on a sponsor's exemption, as is Adam Scott. And you can make a case for all of these sponsor exemptions that they're eminently deserving on the basis of their record, their reputation, all of that. But they are also two members of the PGA Tour's policy board, and starts are considered pretty precious on the PGA Tour this year. Does the tour need to be a little bit more stringent when it's giving out sponsor exemptions or the rules governing those sponsor exemptions into these particularly lucrative events?
Eamon, I'm going to leave some time for Johnson on this one because my guess is he's got a lot of thoughts. I read your column, Eamon, this weekend, and I agreed 100% with the points you made. It's not as though, let's make this a blind taste test, shall we? Take Webb Simpson's name out of it. Everyone knows, really good guy, really accomplished player, and he is a policy board member. However, when you look at the way these are playing out this year with a greater portion of player directors getting these exemptions into these big events, I think it is going to become a problem because you have sort of the rank and file class who don't like sitting back and not having access to these events, which give out so many points so much money, and they're so important to how well you play that season, and not having access to it other than the Aeon 5 or 10. And we can sit and talk about that as well. I guess the point that I kept coming back to is there's always been restrictions on these exemptions. If you're a member, you could take unlimited, but if you weren't a member, you were only allowed to take 7. So why couldn't we just limit these into these exemptions into these signature events? Limit it to 2. That's 25% of 8 signature events. That's more than enough for a player to make their hay.
What do you think, Johnson? Is it too much of a closed shop, especially when you have so many has versus have-nots, even on the PGA Tour?
Well, I've been saying that it's been too closed of a shop for a long time. But to talk about Webb and Adam specifically, we're talking about two players' champions. They're also both major champions. Webb is a member here and lives on property. So when you talk about those guys getting spots into this week specifically, Adam Scott has supported this tournament over the years. I know they both got spots at Pebble Beach. They're both incredible in pro-ams. They have been supportive of the tour and tournaments for a long time. And yes, they're on the policy board. Do you guys have any idea what's been asked of these policy board members over the last couple seasons? I understand all the arguments made against them getting spots, but let's not forget the most important thing is their sponsor exemptions. And the people that are putting on these tournaments have the right to give them to any member of the PGA Tour that they want. They just so happen to be giving them to two of the greatest guys that the PGA Tour has ever seen time and time again. And that's because of the character and the values that these both those players share.
Yeah, but come on, Johnson, being a nice guy is not a good enough excuse to take 4 of these sponsor exemptions when there are many deserving guys out there who support golf tournaments all the time. And yes, a lot has been asked of policy board guys, but the optics of this are lousy when it comes to policy board members taking, maxing it out at 4 of these. I mean, that's half the starts Webb has actually made this year. And I get why Webb Simpson's considered a good candidate for that and why he's there. I don't have a problem with Webb Simpson or Adam Scott being there. The issue is the fact that policy board guys are seeming to be gaming the system in their benefit. Even if they're not, that's the perception that's taking root out there.
Yeah, and I understand that perception, but it's up to the tournaments as individuals. I don't think there is at any point the tour strong-arming any of these tournaments to get policy board members in. There's a reason these guys were voted to be on that board is because they care about the PGA Tour. They've got qualities that other players like in them, and that's why they were voted that position. Those are the same reasons why sponsors, Adam Scott's been playing the PGA Tour for 20-plus years. There are reasons why these sponsors here at Wells Fargo Championship want him in the field, and it has nothing to do with the fact that he's a policy board member. I get you with the optics, but that has nothing to do with any of this.
Rex, I'm curious your thoughts, because I went to the Mexico Open at Vedanta earlier this year and spoke to some players and caddies, you know, away from the cameras, quietly, with no notepad, and there was some discontent, maybe as much discontent that I'd ever heard from the rank and file in my 20 years of covering this event. Are you sensing the same thing, Rex, in your conversations about the split between the players competing in the signature events and those who aren't?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen the divide this wide, to your point. There's always been two classes on the PGA Tour. There's the stars, and then there's the rank and file. And I think they've always been able to mix and match pretty well throughout the history of the PGA Tour. The difference now is you have created a class system with the signature events, designated events last year, where you're suddenly struggling to get into starts. We've talked about this the last few weeks, about players who simply haven't been able, they have a tour card, but they've only got a handful of starts. I think that divide is only going to get wider. Last week, to your point, I spoke with a lot of players about the player equity program, which everyone got letters last week, or the 192 players who received equity in PGA Tour Enterprises got letters. I heard a lot from players who didn't get letters, and that's only going to make the divide wider, and I don't know how you can circle back around now. I understand where Johnson is coming from, and that's why I wanted to take Webb out of it and Adam Scott out of the conversation, because those are two of the best players on the PGA Tour and two of the most liked players on the PGA Tour, but that doesn't change the optics.
Well, we've got a lot more to talk about, including guys who are in the field next week who are under some question out there among the chattering classes at this point. We're going to be right back with Johnson and Rex after this short break. We're back in Golf Today, continuing our conversation with Johnson Wagner and Rex Hoggard. Rex, I want to go back to the weekend. Phil Mickelson tweeted what was a slightly vague threat that LIV players might someday en masse boycott major championships unless those majors create a direct pathway for LIV players. Do you ever see a scenario in which Brooks Koepka or John Rahm's going to sit at home during a major because Taylor Gooch or Joaquin Niemann is not getting a start that week?
No, and I don't think Phil Mickelson is the ally that anyone wants in this conversation, to be quite frank with you. Now, the Taylor Gooch conversation is a much different issue, and I do think the major championships, when we heard it last month at the Masters, where it's going to be up to the majors to decide which players they want into their fields to make sure they do have, quote-unquote, the best possible fields they can. And I think we saw that this week with the PGA of America, extending invites to members who of LIV Golf who probably wouldn't have qualified elsewhere. I think you'll start to see that more and more from the governing bodies, but no, I can't imagine in any universe a Brooks Koepka or a John Rahm or any of the other top players would pass up an opportunity to play in a major championship just to make a point. I don't see that ever happening.
The ludicrousness of these comments coming out of this tour are just ridiculous. And you have guys getting these spots into the PGA Championship and complaining about getting spots into the U.S. Open and Open Championship, yet they're not willing to go to sectional qualifying. I'm baffled. I have no problem with people going to live, take your money and go. But to think that you could have it both ways is mind-boggling to me. And some of them need to start drinking some truth serum, because what they're doing right now is just making them look foolish.
Well, you drink a lot of truth serum, Johnson. That's why we love you. What was your reaction to Taylor Gooch receiving that exemption in the PGA? Nice enough guy, likes red wine like I do, but I was a bit surprised, I'm not going to lie, when I saw his name chosen for an exemption into the PGA.
Well, I was personally very excited to see Joaquin Niemann get a spot into the Masters. He made an effort to go play in Australia and to go play in other parts of the world. And Taylor has played some wonderful golf on the LIV circuit, but he hasn't really made an effort. He didn't go play sectional qualifying at the U.S. Open last year after complaining about not being in the tournament. He said he's not going to go play sectional qualifying this year. I'm a little surprised the PGA gave him a spot, but he's probably deserving. I'm sure he's playing well. We'll see how it goes next week for him. But I'm over the narrative of the, they're trying to become the victims now, and they're the ones that kind of caused this whole structure of the PGA Tour to break down. So the fact that they want it both ways is just not playing well with me, and it's not going to for a while.
Rex, going back to the Wells Fargo this week, there are a lot of guys in the field who really need a big week before they get to Valhalla next week. One of them is grinding out there on the range right now, Victor Hovland, who's had, by his standards, a pretty poor year coming off the FedEx Cup win last year. Is he the guy at the top of your list who needs to find something this week before he heads to Kentucky?
Yes, definitely Victor Hovland would be on the list, but if I had to start, and if I'm being honest, it's going to be Jordan Spieth. I think Johnson Wagner and I were both in Dallas last week, and we watched him play the first two rounds, and we actually had a really good conversation on air just about the idea that it's probably time for Jordan to make a decision to go in a different direction. And I'm not talking about a swing coach-wise, I'm talking about the left wrist injury. It's clearly a problem. It's clearly something that's keeping him from playing the golf that he wants to play, the golf that we all know he's capable of playing. Now, I spoke with Jordan about this last week, and he said he's not going to make it worse, he's not going to make it better by playing. The way he explained it to me is he didn't feel like there was a surgical procedure that was going to make it work. But when he talks about the idea that he doesn't know when it's going to, quote unquote, pop out, and we're talking about the ligament popping out of the sheath in his wrist, that seems to me terrifying. And I don't know how you can possibly play professional golf with that looming over you. And I think that's what we're seeing out of Jordan Spieth right now. So if we don't see a turnaround, whether it's this week or if it's Valhalla for the PGA Championship, or at least over the next few weeks, I think he has to make a decision about how he's going to treat this particular injury. Maybe taking 6 months off at this point is the best option.
Jordan Spieth, a FedEx Cup champ. Johnson, Victor Hovland, a FedEx Cup champ. The way he closed last season was something I'll never forget. And to see him on the driving range doing all these funky swing moves when he hit the ball the way he did last year, I'm completely befuddled and confused. You've won three times out there. We know this game is tough, but can you take us inside the mind of a player who played as brilliantly as he did and then is breaking it all down and trying to do it a different way?
Yeah, and I'm not going to speculate what happened with him and his coach last year, Joseph Mayo, but they clearly had a phenomenal run from Memphis all the way through the playoffs, coming off the best year of his career. And then I go forward to the Players' Championship, and it was Wednesday afternoon. I was on the back of the range, and he's out there, last guy on the driving range, working with his coach at the time, Grant Waite. He then goes out and plays four holes to finish his Wednesday preparation into the gloaming, and then is out early the next day. He's clearly a guy that's searching. I think he's since found another coach to go work for. And from what I understand, Victor Hovland is just trying to get back to where he has one shot, and that's the fade that he was so good at. And hopefully he gets there soon. But it's confusing why he would want to make the changes he did at the end of a banner year.
And Rex, one of the guys Victor Hovland went up against last year in the PGA Championship, Brooks Koepka, he won the LIV event in Singapore at the weekend. He's got to be on everybody's list of guys most likely to walk away with the Wanamaker Trophy next week, right? He never ceased being Brooks Koepka based on who was signing the check on whatever tour he was playing on. But it's got to be worrying for some of these other guys when you see Brooks Koepka start to round into some form and some confidence.
Yeah, I think after Scottie Scheffler, and we can all agree he's going to be one on that list, I think Brooks is probably going to be number two going into the PGA Championship. And I know that's being a bit of a prisoner of the moment based on what he has done so far this season. But I think the narrative coming out of the Masters, the idea was, well, he can flip the switch. Well, he didn't flip the switch, so maybe this is a different Brooks. Maybe he's not getting the reps he needs. Maybe he's not focused the way he needs to. Now, this reminds me a lot of what happened last year just before the Masters when he won the LIV event in Orlando. And he was clearly in good form when he showed up at Augusta National, and that carried over to the PGA Championship. I would actually be shocked if he doesn't give himself a chance to win at Valhalla.
What do you think, Johnson? Is there some level of admiration or at least appreciation for how Brooks has kept himself sharp and in the fight and focused on what's always been important to him, even if he does now play on a different tour?
It's kind of mind-boggling when you look at his career as a whole that he's got just about as many major wins as he does regular wins. I think when it's all said and done is in his career, he's going to go down as somewhat of an enigma that way. He's already got three PGA championships. You would have to think, based on the places he's won, that Valhalla would be a good place for him. And clearly, coming off a win's a good thing. And he doesn't need form. I would think Scottie Scheffler and Brooks Koepka are the two guys I don't worry about form leading into a major championship at this point.
Should be a great week this week and next week as well. We appreciate the thoughts of Rex and a feisty Johnson Wagner on this Tuesday. Stay with us. We've got live golf coming your way, 3 p.m. Eastern time, leading you into live second round coverage of the PGA Works Collegiate Championship from TPC Sawgrass.
Party's over and it's time to get back to work for Rory McIlroy. Fresh off his win with Shane Lowry at the Zurich Classic and a birthday last weekend, the world number two, gunning for a fourth win at Quail Hollow and a fifth major next week. We'll catch up with him in Charlotte. And you might not recognize this face, but you'll certainly recognize the voice. Bob Parsons has lived many lives. War veteran, internet entrepreneur, golf club developer. He's got a new memoir out and he's here to talk about the wild ride he's had. And as we gear up for the PGA Championship, we'll take a look back at the greatest moments in tournament history as Golf Today continues.
Golf Today.
Welcome back into Golf Today. Eamon Lynch alongside Damon Hack. Damon, we just had a discussion, a spirited discussion earlier with Rex Hoggard and Johnson Wagner about this week at Quail Hollow. Guys who are struggling, coming off good years in some cases, they need to find something before they get to the big show next week with the PGA Championship. Who is on your list where you look at and think that guy really needs to find a spark desperately?
Spieth. Jordan Spieth. I want to see the
no hesitation there.
Previous best player from Texas take on the current best player from Texas and the best in the world in Scottie Scheffler. I'd love to see those two proud Longhorn alums duel at Valhalla next week. I'm just concerned that Jordan is lost a bit, and whether it's the wrist or just loss of confidence or which came first, chicken or the egg, that's the guy I think that the game of golf misses playing height of power.
What's worse, the idea of the wrist injury where you at least know what it is, or where Victor Hovland seems to be, which is sort of lost in swing theory right now?
How about that video that we showed? I don't know what he was doing. Was he dancing?
I've seen you do similar things to that on the range.
Absolutely. I mean, this game is hard, as we know, but to see someone finish as well as he did 2023, searching so much in 2024, it's a reminder that even the best players in the world get a little crazy. It's not just the 20 handicaps.
No, well, being inquisitive is what got Victor Hovland
where
he is in the world right now.
How about it? And you mentioned this week, you know, we'll do PGA next week. This week it's all about Quail Hollow. Gorgeous spot, host of the Wells Fargo Championship. This is the sixth of eight signature events this year. Limited field, competing for a $20 million purse. As mentioned, there is no cut this week. Now, Rory McIlroy's had some success on this course. First career win at the PGA Tour came at Quail back in 2010. 10 under par, 62 in the final round to shatter the course record. And it continues to be a venue that's been good to him. He won by four for that first career win. And in 2015, he won by seven, broke his own course record, shot 61 in the third round, tied for his lowest round ever on the PGA Tour, and won the 2021 edition as well by a single shot, one of two tour events he's won three times, and finished tied for 22nd at the 2017 PGA Championship at Quail. With more on the world number two, let's welcome back our good buddy Todd Lewis. T-Lew?
Yeah, hi there, Damon. Rory McIlroy arrives here in the Queen City with some positive mojo. As you mentioned, he won in his last start, that being the Zurich Classic in New Orleans. He picked up his 25th PGA Tour win alongside his friend Shane Lowry. And not only was he walking the fairways with his good buddy, he had a lot of fun in his first appearance at the Zurich Classic. He also was able to win. And because of that wonderful experience, now on a golf course where he's won multiple times, and next week at Valhalla where he's also won, he's subconsciously or maybe even consciously in a better frame of mind.
I think, you know, we've got a great run of events coming up with here, the PGA at Valhalla, and then going to, a great stretch of golf with Canada, Memorial, U.S. Open at Pinehurst, which I love as well. So I think the week in New Orleans did me the world of good just in terms of the fun element. You know, it was a lot of fun. We had a great time, regardless of the result. But then obviously the result was a bonus too, and getting the win with Shane. And I think as well with how I felt like my game came around, especially on the weekend there. I played great. You know, we got off to a bit of a slow start Saturday, but I think I played the last 10 holes on Saturday and 6 under. And then, you know, I played a super solid round of golf on Sunday, even though I only hit half of the shots. The shots that I did hit, I thought were pretty good. So, and then to win with a friend, and to, you know, what that did for both of our seasons, right? You know, it got Shane into the last few signature events. It got us both up the FedEx Cup points list quite a bit, and it gave us a lot of confidence going into the meat of the season and the summer. So, it was a great week. I'm obviously so glad that we were able to do it and play, and it definitely makes me excited about the rest of the year.
I want to follow up what you said. You said it did a lot for you from a fun perspective. Was fun missing heading into New Orleans?
I think when you're going through a spell of golf where you're not getting the results that you want, it's hard to have fun, right? It's hard to keep your enthusiasm. It's hard to keep that sort of positive mindset week in, week out. And that, you know, that was my fourth week in a row. And I was saying to my team last week, you know, it's a great lesson for me that when things aren't going great, sometimes it's not about going back home and working on your game and standing on the range. It's about trying to play and play through it and understand what your misses are and how to manage. And, it was a good lesson to me that, you know, sometimes just to keep going is the right thing to do, and to keep playing and to keep, keep working on what you're working on and having faith that it is all going to come together at some point.
Well, it did. And you mentioned expectations. I'd like to know what your expectations are when you tee it up here at Quail Hollow.
Yeah, I think it's hard for me to come here and not have high expectations because of my history here and how well that I've played. But I love this. I love the golf course. I love the area. I love the Harris family. So, you know, regardless of the expectations that I have coming into this event, I always know that I'm going to have a good week because of the history that I've had here, the rapport I feel like I've built up with the fans and the community, and how much support I get. So, and I think that all of that together helps me play better golf too. So it sort of goes hand in hand. But yeah, I love this week, and you know, for it to be the first PGA Tour event that I ever won, and the memories that I've had from that, and you know, the success that I've had since. You know, I always come here with really good vibes.
Now, Rory McIlroy is the favorite heading into the Wells Fargo Championship, and for good reason. Yes, he's won here multiple times, but also consider this. There's been a lot of rain that has fallen here in Charlotte over the last week. This golf course is really, really soft, so it makes it longer. It's already a big ballpark. Here on this golf course, length is a big, big advantage. So a longer, softer golf course, so that's positive for Rory McIlroy. Also, these greens have been regrassed. They are very firm, so you have to hit these high towering shots to these greens to keep them on the green. Another advantage for Rory McIlroy. So this golf course is set up, seems like, just for him. He could be striking the right notes here in Charlotte. Speaking of striking the right notes, let's go back to the Zurich Classic. And after Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry won that tournament, they ended up on stage. And Rory McIlroy grabbed the mic while his good buddy Shane Lowry was doing an interpretive dance to his left. And Rory busted out Steve Perry, Journey, Don't Stop Believin'. Of course I took notice. And I had to ask Rory this afternoon, hey, is this a learned ability, the singing, or were you just born with a natural gift?
I am not naturally gifted. If anyone actually heard my voice, they would know that. You know, as like 80s rock songs go, it's probably one of the only ones that I know. So I'm glad that he sort of gave me that one as an option. And if I were to have a karaoke song, that would be it. But only like the first two or three verses. I don't think I know the words for the whole song. But you know, I'm good for like the first minute of that song. So I'm glad that's all that people saw.
Well, to be honest with you, most people are only good for about the first minute of that Steve Perry Journey song, because once you get into the chorus, I mean, you really got to climb the vocal ladder. And Rory admits he can't quite get there. So, you know, he gave it his best shot. You know, if you had to grade him, I'd give him a B, maybe a B+ for effort. For courage to get up there, you have to give him an A+, right, guys?
No doubt. And nobody climbs the vocal ladder, by the way, better than our own Todd Lewis, who knows his way around a karaoke bar about as well as anybody in creation.
Hey, Damon. Hey, I'm just a small-town boy living in a lonely world.
And not born and raised in South Detroit, very comfortable in his native North Carolina. No. We appreciate T. Lou's reporting on Rory, who, by the way, Eamon Lynch, looks as happy as I can recall, a little unshaven. Rory, 25-time winner now on the PGA Tour, 4 majors, 3 FedEx Cups, a Players' Championship, the BMW PGA, the flagship event of the DP World Tour, a Ryder Cup hero. My goodness, a man in full now, I think. Yeah, he doesn't have a green jacket yet, but when you look at the resume as a whole, you look at that comfort there, and speaking to Todd Lewis, I think he'll be very, very happy with where he stands on this day.
And every time you kind of recite that resume, which is endlessly impressive, it still ends up, the conversation comes around to the last 10 years.
Yeah,
he hasn't won a major championship. And he's going back next week to the venue where he last won a major. And I always thought that was his best major because it was the only one where he was really involved in a dogfight against Phil Mickelson and Ricky Fowler on that Sunday afternoon in the rainstorm with a light fading fast. The rest of them he kind of won in blowouts.
He stepped on some necks at Valhalla 10 years ago.
He really did. And, you know, Paul McGinley's a great advocate of wanting to see that kind of Rory McIlroy again. Paul always refers to it as the sharp elbows, Rory, the kind of attitude that says, get out of my way. I'm here now. This is my show. And maybe we'll see a little bit more of that. There are expectations on him this week as well. As he said, it's hard to come here and not have high expectations given how well he's played here. But I did think it was interesting him talking about getting the fun back into it. He and Lowry are kind of two peas in a pod. They get on really well together.
Yeah.
They were relaxed, having fun throughout the Zurich. Rory normally doesn't do 4 weeks in a row, and that was his fourth straight. He'll do 4 in a row later this year as well during the summer that will end in Hartford the week after the US Open. But he definitely seems to be in a place where he's had a little bit of reminder of how to play his way through slumps that he's not really enjoying or getting the results that he's expecting, but how to actually enjoy the journey as well.
Welcome back to Golf Today. What a life Bob Parsons has lived, founder of GoDaddy and 2012, Parsons founded YAM Worldwide, under which he owns and operates more than a dozen companies, including PXG. You know the name well. Parsons, with his wife and PXG president of apparel, Renee, started the Bob and Renee Parsons Foundation in 2012 to reach marginalized populations in causes often underfunded by mainstream philanthropy. In his new book, Fire in the Hole, Bob shares his story of extraordinary success as a self-made serial entrepreneur. Fire in the Hole is honest, hilarious, outrageous, raw, and full of valuable business and life lessons. And it's great to welcome Bob to this Tuesday edition of Golf Today. Bob, so nice to spend some time with you. Writing a book can be stressful and also cathartic, I imagine. What prompted you to take on this book?
Well, you know, it is. I've had a lot of things happen to me in my life that were interesting, to say the least. And I've had so many of my friends, and particularly the guys I served with in Vietnam, all said to me, "Brother, you need to write a book." And so, you know, a big part of the book is my mother, and I had to wait until she passed to do it. But, you know, she passed about 5 years ago, and then I started the book. And the reason I wanted to wait for her to pass is because during most of my life, she had a nervous breakdown, suffered from a lot of mental illness. And, you know, I needed to kind of tell the story the way it was, and I knew that would upset her. So I waited.
Bob, in the book you write a lot about a childhood that was difficult, issues with both of your parents. How much of your success since then has been driven by and shaped by that childhood?
About the time in the military?
Or just even your childhood, in the manner in which you grew up. You've written in the book how both of your parents were also...
You know, I think everybody's childhood is, you know, part and parcel to, you know, what they're going to do later on. And, you know, mine certainly was. And, you know, my childhood was, you know, my parents were compulsive gamblers. So we were usually broke, as, you know, most gamblers' families are. And so as I got older, if I wanted anything, I had to figure out how to get it myself. And I got to be pretty good at it. So, you know, I'd say the answer to that is, yeah, a significant amount.
You're a self-made man, a serial entrepreneur, as you call yourself, but you overcame some very difficult circumstances. Did you ever wonder if you would get out of those circumstances in East Baltimore? How did you do it?
Well, you know, East Baltimore was one thing, and, you know, I never really thought about it too much because that was all I knew at the time. Vietnam was another thing. I thought for sure I would die over there. But of course that didn't happen. And, you know, when I came home and, you know, got an education, you know, I was terrible in school, terrible. But when I went into college after the Marine Corps on the GI Bill, graduated magna cum laude. And then I passed CPA exam first time. I'd have never done that without the Marine Corps. And so, you know, I like to say everything I've ever accomplished, I owe to the United States Marine Corps.
Bob, you found your way into the golf business. You developed Scottsdale National, PXG, obviously. What was the appeal for you in golf?
What was the appeal in golf? I'm sorry, guys. My hearing's not the best. And my assistant is crawling around on the floor, cleaning up some water. So, the appeal was, you know, I just started playing it with some buddies during my first business. And, we all got, you know, we were terrible together. Then we got a little better and a little better and then sort of okay. And then, you know, when you get sort of okay, that's when the addiction sets in. And, I mean, we started with taking Wednesday afternoon off, and then Wednesday afternoon to Thursday morning, and then weekends, and then we'd go to any convention we could find. It was even a little bit relevant. Never go to one session at a convention, but go play golf. So started in the early 90s, late 80s.
Bob, I've always been struck by your work through golf at PXG and through your foundation. You help a lot of veterans, different veterans organizations, many men and women who aren't able to even speak about their experiences in combat. How are you able to reflect on those frightening months and years and turn maybe a very scary time into helping those that are in need?
Well, you know, I've always been, you know, a guy that liked helping others. And, you know, after I made money from Parsons Technology and then GoDaddy, I was even much more so. You know, for me, it was the big break came when I was treated with psychedelics. I read this book by Michael Pollan called How to Change Your Mind. And it's an excellent, excellent book. Reads like a novel. And so I told my wife I'd like to try psychedelics to get rid of my PTSD that I came back from the Marine Corps with. And so anyhow, she had me hooked up within 2 weeks. And then I was, I was treated by two guides at an undisclosed location at my house in Hawaii. And anyhow, after 4 days of that, being treated with ayahuasca, magic mushrooms, and LSD, and then being a therapeutic setting, because it's, you know, psychedelics don't do the healing. The therapy does the healing. Psychedelics make it possible. So I finished. I mean, I was a different guy. Everybody noticed it. My wife noticed it. People I work with, you know, said, you know, what happened to Bob? I mean, you know, he's all of a sudden, he's a nice guy. He's, you know, he laughs a lot. He, you know, he doesn't get upset. He's so kind. You know, that was the way I was meant to be. So that's what I am very active in, trying to reach my buddies and everybody in the military that suffers from PTSD, plus police, firefighters, who suffer from it probably more than the military. Anyhow, the idea is not to, you know, get rid of any of us, but it's to make us better, and that's what psychedelics do.
Bob, you've never been known as a wallflower on any controversial issue, and you've given some interviews in which you've been fairly direct on your view of the split in golf and LIV Golf, and at PXG declined to renew contracts of players who moved to the LIV Golf Tour. Why do you feel so strongly about LIV?
Well, we didn't decline to, you know, renew their contracts. It's that, you know, they weren't able to do for us what they did when we signed the contract with LIV. I mean, you know, with LIV, you got to wear the team hat and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, it didn't make any sense. So it didn't have anything to do with LIV other than the fact that the guys couldn't fulfill their contract when they were with LIV. Now, that said, you know, we're still watching the LIV Tour for what it's going to be able to do for us. As a company, because that's how we got to spend our dollars. We know what the PGA Tour will do, and that's where we have our dollars and our money and our players. But it's going to be interesting. And then, you know, there's this onus about, you know, what may or may not have happened with 9/11 and the Saudis. So, you know, it's a lot to consider.
Bob, we appreciate your time. Thank you for your service. Can't wait to read the book, and we'll see you down the road.
All right, guys. Fire in the hole.
Fire in the hole. There it is right now. And before we go to break, have another look at Bob's book, Fire in the Hole. What a life he has lived.